Welcome to Shift with CJ. I'm your host CJ, and together we will explore the areas of health, human performance, biohacking, psychology, and much more that will inspire you to become the best version of yourself.
Hello everyone, I am back from New York. I spent 2 weeks with my mom, and honestly, this was one of the best decisions I've made this year. It reminded me how powerful family time is, especially when we are always running around, especially when I'm always running around. So one of the things that I've learned from this trip is that if you have some loved one in your life and you've not been meeting them for a while, then travel with them. It's a really, really good feeling. And today I have something interesting for you. We haven't spoken for a long time, but today I have something interesting. So let's get into the deep dive of science on the Shift with CJ podcast. Now, before we take a deep dive, I wanted to ask you a crazy question. I've asked men this quite a lot, but if you're a woman and you're listening to this, you might find it a bit weird. How many times do you think you urinate, or how many times a day do you think you pee? Sounds crazy, right? I know, it does. But more often than not, we don't estimate. We always look at how many times we go to poop, but we don't think of how many times we go to pee. I, in the last few months, have been going quite a lot, and I was a bit concerned. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to take a deep dive into this. And I was surprised by what I found. So I'm going to share with you all of that and more in this podcast. So there are multiple studies done on this. Cleveland Clinic defines frequent urination as going more than 8 times in a 24-hour period and waking more than twice per night. This also is a condition that we call nocturia. But it's crazy that a lot of people are going to urinate quite a lot, and they often ignore it, just like me. But there can be like crazy things that can impact your longevity. One of the things can be a urinary tract infection. So according to that same research by Cleveland Clinic, they found that UTIs are very common in women. And what happens is you get infected, and then there is a lot of inflammation in the bladder and the urethra, and this makes people go often to like peeing. Diabetes also is one of the reasons, because when you have excess sugar, it gets dumped into your urine, and you pull water along with it, with the sugar molecules. So your body is constantly trying to flush off that water, so you pee more. And for men, it can also be an enlarged prostate. So this usually happens when you're like 50 years and above. Your prostate then squeezes the urethra, and then it makes emptying the bladder more harder. So you often go to pee quite a lot. But it could also be if you've had some sort of a stroke or a spinal injury or a neurological condition like fibromyalgia or Parkinson's, your bladder's signal system kind of gets like scrambled. So according to the Cleveland Clinic, the nervous system actually misfires, and that creates the urgency to go, or in the extreme, incontinence. Even when you are having some sort of like an anxiety or depression, that can offset or short circuit your bladder's control networks in the brain. And in fact, there's a study in the Frontiers of Public Health in 2021, and they said that anxiety and depression can actually increase the number of visits you go to the toilet to pee quite a lot. And the same study found out that this was done in China, and over like 4,500 adults between the age of 65 to 100 found that they suffered for this frequent urination for years before they even like thought of asking someone about it. So I was like a bit alarmed, and I know a lot of people might not talk about this, but it's essential that we talk about it so we can look at something that is preventable, especially in the short term. So to interesting correlations were constipation. So once the colon and the bladder, they share some nerves together and the nerves pathways. When you're constantly constipated, that messes up some of those nerves and it leads to especially weakened pelvic floor. And if you have some sort of a brain injury, maybe you're doing MMA or sports or maybe jiu-jitsu like me, these nerves can be compromised and that can also let you go to the toilet quite a lot just to pee. There are also certain medications like diuretics. A lot of people take these water pills, antidepressants. A lot of the biohackers are taking lithium for their brain. This can also increase their trips to the toilet. Antihistamines can do it as well. And all of these things, they either mess up with your nervous system or they increase the bladder activation. So there's more urine production. And something simple as like what I'm having here, coffee. So not just coffee, but even alcohol. So caffeine and alcohol are both diuretics, means that they will increase your fluid output and they stimulate what we call as the bladder muscles. So if you drink a lot of coffee like me, then chances are you will go to the toilet quite often. Now, here's where it gets interesting. And here's what you guys have to look out for. If you are peeing more than 8 times a day and you wake up a minimum of like 2 times at night, then chances are that you might fall under one of these categories. So I would encourage you, start noting down the amount of times you go to pee. Try to do it for like 4 to 5 days. How many times do you go? When do you go? What do you drink? Like, where are the patterns? What do you drink when you have to go to pee? How urgent it feels like? It will give you a lot of information. Now, if you have a UTI, then one of the interesting things is methylene blue. So if you take methylene blue, if you urine dilate it, then it concentrates in your bladder and kills out all the bacteria and you get a nootropic effect as well. Cranberry juice is really nice. So they help stop the bacteria from clicking on to the urinary tract walls. For men, you know, you can support your prostate health by increasing or by decreasing insulin resistance. That means you swap for more whole foods, you sleep better at night, you train hard, you supplement good, and then try to fix your hydration. Hydrate more in the morning. Stop your coffee by 2. I wish I could stop it by 4. That would be good. But so these are some of the things. And if you think that you have to go to pee too often, then like we discussed, it might not just be your bladder. It's also usually something from the nervous system, maybe your metabolism, maybe your hormones, or maybe you just need to fix your habits. The real fix is to be aware, listen, and support the systems that are actually screaming for your attention. So the next time you feel like you're going to the toilet a lot, then just measure it. So after doing all of this research, like I've been measuring mine and I thought it was a lot, but thank God it's not too much. And I use some of those strategies and like it's better now. I try to limit my water intake after 5 or 6. So that's helped really quite a lot. The next thing I want to tell you is if you're here in Dubai, you know that summer is here, right? It started to get hot. And we don't like to be outside too much when it's really hot. Yeah, in January, February, March, when the weather is nice in Dubai, everyone likes to be outside. When I used to live in my villa, I used to have a nice backyard. So I was always, you know, half naked, looking at getting the sunlight, getting grounding. But then since I moved out of my villa, I've been a little bit far away from the beach. So I feel like I don't get enough sun. In the beginning, I was really frustrated because, you know, vitamin D levels are correlated with longevity. But now I found a sweet hack, especially in the hotter days. I wake up in the morning, head to the gym, head to jiu-jitsu. And after that, right after jiu-jitsu, I go outside and get like 20 minutes of sun. Anyway, why am I talking about sun? I'm talking about sun because for decades, we believed that you know, if you eat less and you move more, you will lose weight, right? But nowadays, there are more things coming into play. There are hormones, there's receptors, there's nutrient signaling. Two of the nutrients that I want to talk about, or two of the hormones I want to talk about, is leptin, which is your hunger and your fat storage hormone, and myostatin. Myostatin is a protein that actually limits your muscle growth. Now, something so interesting that I read recently, there was a recent study that shows vitamin D directly influences leptin and myostatin levels. Now, what does that mean? It means that vitamin D can actually help you gain more muscle and lose more weight. All of this was coming from a researcher who was actually studying this great guy called Ray Peet, and they were looking at vitamin D and its effects on metabolism and its effects of mimicking some of the steroid factors. Now, let's think about this, right? What happens when you take steroids? You grow muscle. This is actually by suppressing the myostatin. You increase your protein synthesis. You repartition those calories to muscle. You increase your metabolic rate. And vitamin D has a enormous effect on your hormones, your liver, your brain. And when you look at the science of muscle-centric medicine, they show us that one of the key ways to lose fat is actually to build more muscle. And actually, vitamin D can help you build more muscle. Now, the researchers, they did a lot of experiments. The primary results come from mice, where they divided the mice into three categories. And one category of mice had deficient levels of vitamin D. The other had just average, and one had high. The ones that had high vitamin D levels, their grip strength increased, their myostatin levels dropped, so they were gaining more muscle, their fat dropped, and their muscle increased. So the calories that they were consuming were redirected into making more muscle mass rather than putting it on for fat. Their leptin sensitivity also improved. That means they had better fat metabolism. Their metabolic rate increased. So they were burning more calories while they were resting. And what was interesting as well is that their bone density and their height increased as well. So imagine all of that, but just not with anabolic steroids, not with testosterone, not with all of those things, just with sun. I know in the UAE, because the summer months are so hard, most people are vitamin D deficient, but vitamin D is such an awesome thing if you want to go get it. It triggers nitric oxide. That means you have more vascular or vasodilation, more blood flow increases. It enhances your immune system. It enhances your mitochondrial function. It enhances all of those things. So I would say, even if you're taking a back step from going to the beach, try to go early, try to go late, but try to get more vitamin D and try to get more sunlight. One thing to do is not to overdo it. I have definitely done crazy stuff earlier when I got to know that vitamin D is amazing, but there is a limitation to what you can have, especially in this climate. So ideally, don't wait till your skin is like red, orange. Just stay there till your skin becomes like pinkish. But just as soon as you're getting there, leave. The best time to do is 20 to 30 minutes right after sunrise. That's the most ideal time. And usually vitamin D is different for different people. So people who have darker skin tones have more melanin. That means they need more sun to get the same amount of vitamin D. And if you want to go and have vitamin D for long periods of time, I would say have some protective compounds like astaxanthin, like 12 grams of astaxanthin, or if you're using NAD precursor like nicotinamide riboside or nicotinamide mononucleotide, that is good. You can also just have nicotinamide and molecular hydrogen. By the way, I'm breathing molecular hydrogen today. Yeah, so breathing like this molecular hydrogen on steroids, it's amazing. And supplements can do good as well, but make sure you go for vitamin D3, not D2. because they're different. You should also do a lot of testing. Some places in Dubai, they do testing, and ideally you should have 60 to 80 nanograms per milliliter. Okay. So this was like cool and interesting research that just came in. And let's recap it. Vitamin D can help you build muscle because it lowers your myostatin levels. As soon as myostatin goes low, signal to put muscle mass, strength increases. It helps you improve your leptin signaling. That means your metabolism increases and you burn more fat. It mimics all the things that you can do with anabolic steroids, but of course, it's not so great. You can supplement with it. Make sure you use vitamin D3, not D2. And just be consistent. Just be consistent. That's it. Like, you can't just go for a week and expect to see a lot of changes and not go for a month. In nature, it doesn't be that way. I know that in a lot of cultures, going out in the sun is not appreciated. But if you can just go outside and burn fat without doing much, then I think it's a good biohack and you guys should try it. Anyway, moving on. Next thing I want to talk to you about is something super interesting. So about 2 weeks ago, we hosted a biohacking meetup at Sand Dunes Paddle Club in Dubai. And if you haven't been there, trust me, you're missing out. We've got EMS, wireless EMS suits, saunas, cold plunges, paddle courts. It's like a recovery house. It's amazing and it's fun. Anyway, we invited a French lady there who barely spoke in English, but she bought something really powerful. It was a machine that was developed in collaboration with the government and military in France 15 years ago to clean air. And they claimed that it could purify the indoor air to the quality of the mountains. So she was doing her speech and I was super intrigued. Then my friend Neera, who's also a part of our biohacking group, and she's an expert in all of these things, she started talking about detoxification and detoxification and elimination and all of these things. And she reminded me that for years, our clients at Biohacking as well, and like some of the people that I've coached personally, they always complain about poor air quality, especially how it affects their health, their kids' health, how it is crazy in school over here. So I started thinking a lot about air. So we talk about going to the gym, getting sunlight, looking at reducing certain macro or micronutrients, fasting, but we're always breathing. And the air around us, whether it's indoors or outdoors, can have a huge impact on our cardiovascular system, our cognitive health, our mental health. And really, we have no idea what we are breathing. There are more countries which have greater research, like the US has great research around air quality. Not that it's any good. They have a lot of issues, but so does like India, China, Pakistan, a lot of these southeastern countries. And I feel like the same is coming here in Dubai. While I couldn't get official numbers, you talk to anyone and they'll tell you how bad the air quality is, how their old parents are suffering, the kids are coughing, the asthma is flaring up, and how people's energy is constantly dropping. And some people would think it's some kind of coincidence, but I don't think so. Because when you are breathing bad air quality, or you are exposed to, let's say, dirty air, all the systems in your body get messed up. You have increased chances of heart attack, increased chances of stroke. Your blood pressure increases. It disrupts your metabolism. It triggers inflammation. You will have people get, like, obesity increases and diabetes worsen. And it's crazy, right? And honestly, it doesn't take much. Even some things which are, you know, 2.5 particulate matter, like really, really, really tiny stuff, it also creates a lot of issues in your body. So I would really, really, really suggest that you guys look at your air quality, because these ultra fine particles that are in polluted airs, you breathe in and it doesn't just go to your lungs, but it actually enters your bloodstream and it enters your brain. It triggers oxidative stress. It raises your cholesterol. It raises your cortisol. It increases your inflammation. And usually people get a lot of brain fog. So all systems in your body are susceptible to this. So we should, as a community, look at finding clean air and try to find ways of getting polluted air out of our body and out of our environment, especially when our loved ones are. So I didn't come here to just tell you about the problem. I have a few solutions as well. One thing is get a good air purifier, especially with HEPA and carbon blocks. Put it in your bedroom, put it in your office. I've ordered one for my office, like a gigantic one now. And if you can, avoid peak pollution hours where everyone's on the street, like 7 to 9 a.m. or evening. Now the traffic is so crazy. So like 5 to 8 p.m. when all the cars are out. If you're walking outside, just be careful. Don't always close your windows. This is a really crazy thing that a lot of people do. Like, don't always close your windows. Let some fresh air come in. Don't use artificial sprays or air fresheners. They will mess you out. And if you can, just try to do more detox. You know, molecular hydrogen is great. Glutathione is great. N-acetylcysteine is great. If you just increase your immunity, going into a cold plunge or going into a sauna, those are great too. So be very, very careful with your air quality. Try to find some, I'm sure there's some apps as well. There's IQ Air and they have like some other data on that as well. So have a look at that and see how you can monitor. That's my molecular hydrogen switching off. Let me switch it on again so I can get a little bit of extra molecular hydrogen now that we're talking about air quality. Okay, I just had 1 hour of molecular hydrogen. I'm going to get some more. One thing I did not talk about is plants. So, you know, there are these plants. There's a study done that was called the NASA Clean Air Study. And if you go through that, there are like about 10 to 15 plants, indoor plants that you can bring in your house, and they're really good. They will they'll help you out with all this air pollution, because you can eat really clean, you can train hard, you can supplement, you can biohack, but if the air that you're breathing is toxic, it's pointless, right? So anyway, come to our next biohacking meetup. Really, it's fun. You get to learn about all of these topics, you get to learn about all of these things. And with that, I think we're done with today's podcast. I just wanted to talk to you about these 2 to 3 things that I think will make a difference in your life. This is CJ, your host, signing out of the Shift with CJ podcast. If you want me to talk about something special, if you're curious about something, reach out to me. And I'll see you in the next podcast. Thank you, everybody.
Your time and presence with us through this podcast is highly appreciated. If you want to learn more, then head over to our website, www.shiftwithcj.com.